You're on.
This is Teresa Allen, and you are listening to the Pacifica Archives Task Force meeting, and today is Tuesday, May 19th of 2015, and on the call are Brian DeShazer, Mark Torres, Lamont Yehi, Jim Boyd, Teresa Allen, and Adriana Casanave, and Steve Pride. Is there anyone else on the call whose name I didn't call? All right. And Brian DeShazer, director of the Pacifica Archives, is giving a report. Proceed, Brian.
Sure. Just to recap real quickly for the stream, I had reported that the archives staff is planning a presentation for the Pacifica National Board Friday, June 12th. And would like to invite all Pacifica National Board members and KPFK local station board members for that. It'll probably be at 8:30 p.m. We'll have wine and cheese and fabulous presentation. Number two was the expansion of our campus campaign, which on the call, Professor Lamont Yehi helped create 6 years ago, and it's a good program that we think that with the right kind of development and attention, we could raise $200,000 annually to help fund the archives. Number three on that was our women's project, funded in part by a grant from the National Archives, and I had just listed all the specific time-consuming tasks that we have to assign all the staff members here at the archives. And we had just finished answering a question that Jim Boyd had about my request for help in getting contacts of teachers, emails, department heads, and colleges to help distribute and promote our studies packs, which are women's studies, LGBT studies, Latin American, Latino, Chicano studies, civil rights, and U.S. history. U.S. history and civil rights are the two subjects that Lamont Yehi helped create and helped us curate and select the programs that connect with actual curriculum. So thanks, Lamont.
You're very welcome.
And I think it's thank you very much for helping us find the key that I think will give us more sustainability in the future.
Brian, this is Jim Boyd again.
Yes, sir.
How do you expect to contact the deans and department heads? Is that going to be email, mail? You need an address, an email address? What do you need?
Any and all of that. We're first going to start with the email, just because it's more quickly delivered. And if we can get an email address, even if we go find somebody to go look up email addresses from websites, we can do that. And then following, you know, the email has an introductory letter, which is attached to the email I sent everybody, which introduces the collection, offers them a free sample, and then has links to give us their name, address, phone number, and contact information. And then we offer them the other packages at $10 each. And then that sort of helps us start the customer service of customizing the materials for the classroom or making the delivery of the audio appropriate for their institution. So that's the answer. We start with an email to them, and then if we have their address, we definitely will mail them physical packages. But we don't want to spend the money on that until we have a first initial contact.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So, Jim, let me add something to this. I think that while the procedure that Brian has outlined is excellent, what always is very, very good is to have the personal contact. For example, what I've done at my school, which is California State University, Los Angeles, is to try to directly go to chairs of departments, for example. And another thing is to, if you know a faculty member at another institution, which is what I'm working on now, to introduce them, just do the physical legwork, really, and to say, look, this is the virtues of this program. I know that Brian and Mark and, of course, Sean Dellen, who's not online with us, but have always been willing to come to the campus and actually give a physical demonstration, which is also a selling point to people. But for the moment, Jim, I would say if you know where you are, or we can identify individuals, even in whether it be at universities in New York or Washington, D.C., wherever we are, you know, in Houston and so forth, to get them to consider this. The personal direct contact is always a good start. Even though this has been very ambitious to have these five categories, I foresee literature, for example, in various English departments, although they teach more than English lit, as you know, political science departments. There's stuff in sociology. There's just an excellent range in music now that's been accumulated through the archives. So I know we have our work cut off, and I just want to lay it out there, even though all of this takes enormous effort. But let me desist in taking up the time for the moment. But I just wanted to amplify what Mark said for you for your benefit, Jim.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Hey, Lamont, can you also articulate, you know, what we're also trying to do is work with authors of history books like Eric Foner. So not only are we offering the audio directly to the classroom, but developing the next stage, which is formalizing our materials into the actual history publications. Is that right, Lamont?
Yeah, well, here's a thought. It's still in the exploratory stage, so I don't want to assume it's a done deal yet, because there's some legal glicks and so forth. But virtually all of the book publishers, whether it be in history, or political science, and so forth, they adopt books that are from the major publishers. For example, Howard Zinn's book, People's History, which is one that I use, that's HarperCollins, for example. And what I would propose is what we've been discussing is that in addition to the textbooks that are offered in history, political science, whatever, that also they offer a CD or either a set of actual recordings that will accompany that particular discipline, if it's economics or, as I said, history, which would parallel the chapters, the discussion that's going on actually in the textbook, so that the students have the benefit of not only the reading the text, reading what the, in this case, say Eric Foner has written in his textbook, but also a student gets to hear Upton Sinclair talk about his experiences with which you have on file, Brian. It's part of our archive collection, what it was like in the meatpacking industry at the turn of the century and in the 30s and so forth, his meeting with Henry Ford and the like, as an example. For people doing literature, Christopher Isherwood and so forth. So I won't elaborate extensively now, but the idea is, and there are two critical parts, well, maybe three critical parts. The first is to what extent the archives can, either legally or directly, is free to make such recordings available once they're drawn up, which would fit the appropriate textbook. Then the textbook publisher, actually the second one would be the faculty member who uses a particular textbook, to agree, in addition to his textbook, to use an archive recording as a requirement in that class. And then thirdly, if these are to be bundled with the textbook, then get the textbook publisher also to come online and agree with it. Because the writer of the textbook may be in agreement, as I am, or a teacher in the class, but we've got to make sure the publisher is willing to do it. But even if the publisher does want to do it, we could still circumvent the publisher and then just offer the recording to the professor of the given course, to offer this as a possibility of his or her courses. So that's what I have to say on that for the moment.
Fantastic, Lamont. Thank you so much. I think that was quite a direction on the path to this new vision. And, of course, vision could never have happened had we not spent the past 12 years in doing digitization projects, little by little, grant by grant, all on the small scale.
Right.
But this
Lamont,
year, National Archives,
yes.
Grand scale.
Lamont, I would like to ask you a question, and I'm sorry if...
I assume this is Teresa, right?
Teresa, and
okay. Okay, Teresa. Yeah.
I truly, truly thank you for your initiative on this, and actually a vision. We have a programmer at KPFT who is he's a history professor at Lone Star Community College, North Harris. And his name is Tony Diaz, and he's also very active with what you may have heard called Libro Traficante.
Okay.
It is a kind of a movement kind of an activist movement in opposition to what states like Arizona were doing to prevent schools from having Black History Studies or Chicano Studies or Women's Studies, to remove those. So,
go ahead.
So, have you, is California seeing any of that pressure to remove those studies? And if so, what arguments do you think that he could use to actually get to use these materials in lieu of a textbook for some of the classes that he's teaching?
Well, I would say this. No, we're not having far from it here in California. I mean, it would be a major academic uproar on that. So we don't have those kind of pressures that you see in Arizona and looming in places like Texas and so forth, where the state authorities want to dictate what's in the classroom. I would say that you could tell the programmer, Tony, I think that the instructor, there's still something called a range of academic freedom. The instructor himself, herself, are still able to select in most places throughout the universe, throughout this country, the books that he or she think is appropriate for that course. And along with the reading or writing or listening assignments, I would suspect, because I can't speak authoritatively on this, that the person conducting the course, the teacher of the course, could then also assign, along with the required materials to know and listen to or hear or acquire, recordings from the Pacific Archive. But that would have to be a case by case. I don't know, is Tony in Arizona or is he in Texas?
He's in Texas, in Houston.
I assumed it was in Houston since you mentioned the radio station. Yeah. Maybe what you could do is put me in direct contact with him, and I can see what exactly his particular problems are and help work through that with him. And then once that's resolved, he can get directly to Brian in the archives. It's going to be a better in a case-by-case situation. But I suspect in Texas he can still select. We have Gerald Horn, who teaches there at the University of Houston, who has a chair in history. But there are other people who, and I don't know what school, it's a community college or another branch of the University of Texas there in Houston. There's a famous Black college there. Southern, in Houston. But what could be done is the instructor still, the teacher of the class, still has the latitude, as I understand it, to select what books he's going to use, what articles he's going to use. There is some material that some teachers were doing their own with Kenco, FedEx Office packages where they put together kind of a reader. So that means if he can do that, he can still pick archive materials, audio materials to be used. Similar to this, that I observed a Latin American studies class last night, and the teacher was showing a documentary, for example, the Academy Award winning one was about Argentina and missing people. But teachers can select audiovisual materials just as they do written materials. So I'd be willing to talk to him. I'll give you my number at the end of the discussion. You can pass it on to him. He can get to me directly.
Okay.
And I can help him on that.
Since you mentioned someone that's at U of H, have you contacted other heads of history departments?
I really haven't been on this in terms of faculty outside the local area. It's certainly my own institution and others here in Southern California.
Mm-hmm.
But time permitting, and this is the issue, summer, maybe I can devote more time and just draw up a quick list and then make the direct initial contact with people I know at schools in other states and communities in other parts of the country. I always think that the personal contact is really best. It really, you know, all the publishers have reps, what they call sales reps, who are knocking on your door every other semester, asking you to, you know, to consider their book, their new update, and they're all doing, which I'd like us to get on top of this early. They all do have a variety of different kind of streaming or online resources in addition to the textbooks that students can go to now. Sometimes they're study guides, sometimes they're preview questions for their exams, and of course, it's still all the record isn't in yet for these online courses, which I'm not too excited about, but, you know, that's another source. But getting back to Spur 1, it would be good to get directly to teachers in the various disciplines, just as agents of the book publishers. Of course, they pay these people. You know, I'm not looking to get paid, and I don't urge us to look to pay people to do it. I just think by word of mouth and by personal contact, Brian, I've been to some of the general conferences here in L.A. In the past, but the various historical, political science, sociological organizations have their annual meetings, anthropology and so forth. Maybe what might also be useful for us to begin to plan and consider is that when these professional organizations have their meetings, the AHA, American Historical Association, usually meets in January, the Organization of American Historians, they meet in April, political science, and just as they are presentations made at these meetings, for us at Pacifica to plan to have at least a session at these meetings too. And they usually are planning, and they're usually pretty open for people to present. And we could, have a broader presentation to the faculties that meet at their own respective disciplines meetings and present the ideas there, too. That'd be a great blunderbuss, if I use that analogy, approach to getting to many people with few expenditures of our own time and leg and all of that to actually, if you get the picture.
Right. I totally get the picture, Lamont. In fact, in my notes about this to the group, I had mentioned organizations like the National Hispanic Education Conference, where we want to start making a calendar of these conferences. We can make those connections, whether it's tabling, asking to present, or having a friend who will carry our message to that conference. So that was actually a call out to this task force to, if you know any educators, and department heads that know of these conferences and conventions that we might be present and promote to, that would be very helpful.
Yeah, I think that would be good. For example, even though we might not have to send people to Washington, like, for example, there was another meeting in Washington, D.C., and in New York, I think, that the American Historical Association met back in January. So if we have faculty that are tied to the local station of Pacifica right there in New York, they could go and make the presentation once we put everything in place to just as the publishers do. They have stands, they set up, they welcome people to come by and see what they're selling, what they're presenting, what can enhance and improve education. So, yeah, this is something, Brian, I'd be working with you and the rest of our task force here on in the summer months. I can't do much now between now and the end of the term, but maybe that can be something I can work on more diligently during the summer with you so we can plan it and get that in the works, at least for some conferences coming up next year, this next academic year.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah, I would say, getting back to Teresa for a minute, I don't know the constraints that in Texas that the state imposes or the local citywide or colleges or state or countywide colleges, however they're funded there. But I think that, just generally speaking, faculty still have something called academic freedom. The issue in it would then be to induce the faculty to consider using some of the Pacific Archive material in their classes.
And it's very affordable.
Yeah, oh, extremely affordable. Sometimes I get students who'll tell me, just for matters of conversation, it's expensive. But I said, how much are you paying for your smartphone every month? Just no comparison, whatever. And if they've got to spend, and the textbooks are just off the charts. They used to be, $25-$30 a paperback for a split. They're running the Brinkley book now is $80 for a paperback. The Foner book is about $45, so it's much more affordable. And I'm thinking, not to speak too liberally in what Pacifica would charge, but certainly I tell students it's required. If you've got to buy one or two textbooks and then you've got to buy a set of recordings for $30, then that's doable. $40. That's doable. People in the sciences, which we could offer some things limited in biology. We do so much on the environment. There are talk shows. not just with Fusikaku and physics in New York, but the KPFA, I forget his name, but he does the show here where he is talking with geographers and they're talking about science, and the interview with the British writer that did the book about Alan Turing. So there's a lot of things that I could help us identify and target for particular disciplines, and then that would be the pitch for that discipline. And in my own class, even though I teach U.S. history, I have worked with dealing with music, Woody Guthrie. I have music, the fellow who did The Wizard of Oz, lyrics for that. You just mentioned Brian is John Coltrane, there's music, but there's other stuff. So I am teaching U.S. history, but I see the history as integral to understanding the poetry that was done, much of the literature at a period of time, some of the music that was done. So we want to expose students not just in a narrow way to the study of the past, to the traditional political and social developments of people, but what was their culture like? What were they reading? What were they thinking about? And Gore Vidal is an intellectual. He touches some of everything. I would say political science, sociology, philosophy, as well as literature. So, in any event, again, I'm feeling guilty. I don't want to monopolize the time for our task force. But these are just some ideas to toss out for us to think about. So,
thank you so much, Lamont. Thank you.
Wow. So we have a lot of work cut out for us. So. Tell me specifically, Brian, what you would like us to do, maybe just between now and the next meeting, when it comes to just, some people might want to just do one thing.
Some
people might be more ambitious or might have an idea of something more that they can do. I mean, I myself want to put the head of the history department at Lone Star, for example, in touch with Lamont, mm-hmm. and the head of and that this history teacher with Lamont.
Well, the assignment would be for next week is if you guys can read the introduction letter in the email I sent and just sort of get a sense of what we're offering. If you can just do some research locally or in your alma mater. Find the name and email and phone number of the department head of some, you know, one or two things. You don't have to go and give me a definitive contact list, but if you just give us a few each, that'll give us legs up. You know, otherwise it's us doing the, you know, website research in each of your areas. So if you can help, you know, volunteer an hour to just do, you know, some searching of colleges, universities, a couple departments, or any actual teacher that you know, that would be helpful. And then I have one more thing for you as a group, which is an actual motion that I would like you all to consider. And Teresa, this actually comes from your questions about what we're archiving contemporarily and currently at the stations. And, you know, the answer really is kind of dismal. And let me see if I can read this so it makes it clear. All right, so Pacifica Radio Archives has had a dedicated T1 phone line and computer station that records KPFK's broadcast signal 24 hours, 7 days a week in archive quality bitrate, which is 128 kpbs. The programs are only listed in that archive computer by date and time of broadcast. There's no title, no description, until we get a request to go retrieve that audio file from that big recorder. Then we have to, you know, give it an archive number, burn a CD, and then put it onto our internal server and give it an item number and a catalog description. Now, the rest of that recording of KPFK signal 24/7 is stored on an annual basis. We move it over to our big server or a hard drive. External hard drive. I was trying to think of that word. So we have a physical external hard drive for each year of KPFK.
Going back to 2006.
This goes back to 2006, and with, I think, 1 year was dropped off for technical purposes. But for the most part, we have what Pacifica has produced and broadcast on KPFK for the past 6 years. But the other stations, we have absolutely no mechanism of recording and archiving the audio. Now, there's two places that that people assume it happens, which is the station's local website, quote, archive, like there's an archive button where you can go back and listen on demand. That actually is only the last 90 days of programming, and only the programs that do not have music in them. After the 90 days, it dumps out and erases itself. There is no way to recover that audio from the website archive. So that's the thing that has been disappearing over the years. All right, I'll stop and let you ask a question.
I'm hearing someone else's voice.
Adriana, I want to ask something.
All right, go ahead, Adriana.
Yes, I know that, I don't know what happened in other stations, but I'm totally sure, and I'm almost sure that the other stations are doing it too, KPFT, have recordings of all our programmings that are being kept, because that is even a requirement. We have to keep that, and I'm sure I saw before recordings older, really from a couple of years ago at least. I'm sure that we can try to find a way for that information to reach you, Brian. I believe.
I think I will talk with Otis about that. Otis might be doing it for KPFT and has it stored somewhere, but we just don't know where it is. But what we're getting to, and that's really great. I'm really glad to hear that, because that means it exists. And just the next step is trying to capture it and then get it over here to the archives in a physical sense. So the only other mechanism of storing digital files from Pacifica is through AudioPort, which is the distribution hub that distributes materials to the affiliate network stations. But that's only selected material that's for distributing, not the local programming. So here's the proposed motion for you. It's recommended that each station dedicate a recording station that replicates the archives KPFK total recorder and sends a hard drive to the Pacifica archives each year. For archiving purposes.
Can you read that one more time?
Yeah, and also it's in the email that I sent you in my notes earlier today.
It is recommended that each station dedicate a recording station that replicates the PRA/KPFK total, in quotes, total recorder, end quotes. And should that be total recorder program or
program.
Process? Or
yeah, total recorder
program.
Okay.
It's a software program that does it for us.
It divides it up into day, and hour.
Right. That Total Recorder software automatically separates it by hour.
Total Recorder program and sends a hard drive to PRA each year.
Right. Let's say at the end of each fiscal year, September 30th. So
each.
The recording would be from October 1st to September 30th each year.
Okay. So, if you want to vote on this, I'm cutting this.
Well, can we do it right now? This is Lamont calling, so speaking. Yeah, I'm 100% in support of this. This is absolutely essential.
Okay, well, let me read it one more time, and then let's open it up to some discussion before we take a vote. Okay, the motion is, it is recommended that each, we'll just say motion that each station dedicate a recording station that replicates the PRA/KPFK, quote, total recorder, end quote, program, and sends a hard drive to PRA each fiscal year. Do you say at the end of each fiscal year?
Yeah, at the end of each fiscal year, I think.
Okay, and so that each station dedicate a recording station. Is that the wording that you want to use? That each station dedicate a recording station that replicates the PRA/KPFK total recording program and sends a hard drive to PRA at the end of each fiscal year. That each see, I don't know the technology, so
I think that's going to be good enough because I think we'll have to give them the technical specifications of what that recording station is, which is a this thing.
Yeah, we have this. We're using the word replicate. This is Mark Torres. We're using the word replicate because we don't actually care which program they use to do it. We just happen to use the Total Recorder program that Otis recommended to us, and we're able to, you know, label the anything we want. So in this case, we label it KPFK, and then the date, and then the hour. And so we have a year's worth of files each year that has, you know, for example, 2014, KPFK 2014, January through December, and each hour. And it's a very inexpensive way to capture the entire history of the station that we may not ever get to, but it's so inexpensive at this point that we will find, you know, the Dr. Martin Luther King of tomorrow. You know, there'll be a pearl in there somewhere, and this is a way to capture our history leading into the future. So,
well, I would like to be as optimistic as Adriana that we are already doing that. I've been asking about that for a long time, but I've never truly had it confirmed that we are actually doing that, because I figured we're only as good as the system that we have to retrieve things. For example, I know that 11 years ago we had a wonderful program that talked about the racial situation in Tulia, Texas, in which a young assistant sheriff or something in that town had about 50 people arrested on drug charges, and finally somebody realized that he was planting drugs on them. So, I mean, this is a classic instance of how, like, the system just kind of approved what was happening, and they didn't question it because he was, you know, having minorities arrested. Okay? And finally it came out. But I've asked several times, can we find that? How can we find that program? And I've never gotten the answer. So I would ask that that we, each of us, talk to our
Teresa, I'm sorry, let me interrupt. Let me do it a different way. I'll go on the this Thursday when I talk to the GMs on the group call. Uh-huh. I'll ask each of them what mechanism at the station do they have of recording their broadcast history, and it may be, you know, Otis will have an answer. You know, I'll find out what the situation is at each station.
Good.
And then we'll go from there. But if Otis has indeed been recording KPFT, then we need to have it delivered here to the archives, because I'm very interested in the broadcast of KPFT during Katrina that I don't have any copies of. So whatever's out there, we want to be able to collect. And then what we want to do is start off with a formal mechanism for each station to do this separately for the archives rather than just the local schmokel.
But so just before we vote on this, I want to ask again, when you say that each station dedicate a recording station,
it's a computer and a what is this
software?
What is this square thing?
A monitor.
Monitor. I had to point at the monitor like a TV and say, "Mark, what is this thing?"
The monitor and
the T1 line, and that's really kind of it.
T1 line is, and what is the software there? Is that
the software is called Total Recorder.
Okay. Software.
Adriana.
Okay, so let me repeat. So maybe for for people that are slow like me, that each station dedicate a recording station, and then parentheses I put computer, monitor, software, and T1 line, in parentheses, that replicates the PRA K50 total recorder program and sends a hard drive to PRA at the end of each fiscal year. Okay, is that okay with you, Brian, that we do that? Because when I see each station and then I see recording station, technologically I'm not making that connection.
Right, I understand the use of the same word in its different definition.
I think I'm going to put Pacifica station in front of the first station.
Oh. Okay,
Adriana, you're next.
Yes. I don't know if we should use the specific language the technical language, because I'm sure I don't have any doubts, because at some point in time they gave me all recorders that I asked for. I know that the station is doing it because it's a requirement. Mm-hmm. It's something that has to do with AFCC.
Mm-hmm.
I know
that requirement isn't keeping it forever. That's only keeping it for a short time period for the FCC to retrieve calls if there's an FCC complaint. So that's within the 90-day period. But after 90 days, it gets erased.
Yes, Brian, but I know that KPFT have that because I have programs that are really old that I asked and they gave it to me. I know that KPFT is recording. I don't know where, and I have an idea, but that's okay. I mean, that's what I'm saying is maybe we don't need to use the specific, maybe we use a different software, and maybe we use different devices. What is important is the idea that we collect that and send it to the PRI at the end of the fiscal year. I think that is the motion, the important part of the motion.
Well, maybe if you don't think I should put these words in, maybe I should put recording station in quotations.
That sounds better.
Right.
That's fine with me.
Okay.
This is Steve Pride.
It's fine with me too.
Okay.
Go ahead, Steve Pride.
Should we specify, because you're talking about the 90-day thing, or you say the KPFK, and I've always found it almost unusable because of the quality. Should we specify a particular fidelity of the recording going forward that they save to give the archives?
Maybe in the motion we should ask that that the archives work with the technicians to improve the audio quality.
Yeah, the audio quality in the station archive that you're talking about, Steve, that's at 96 or 64 kpbs, but our T1 line records it at 128, the archival quality, so that we have a higher sound quality than what you can find from your station archive.
Yeah, that reminds me of my point. If we could take the whole station thing out of the proposal, we should at least specify there's a desired quality for the recording, whatever they come up with.
But the total recorder program is of archival quality, right, Brian?
No, the total recorder software only is the mechanism that separates the hours. The thing that gives it we set the settings at 128 retrieval rate.
Yeah.
So it can be any of the, I mean, whatever software program Otis has that is supposedly recording it, that's fine with us if we can copy it and send it to us.
The total recorder does, in addition to separating it by hour, it does allow you to pick the quality of the recording. And any of these programs, many different programs may do it. I don't think I think the language that we use allows us to, by saying that it's similar to Total Recorder, we're not saying that you have to use Total Recorder, but it must do the same thing, which is give us the programs hour by hour and audio quality of 128 kilobytes. And if any program does that, we don't care which one it is.
Okay,
Mark, just a minute. This is Lamont speaking.
Yeah, this is Mark.
Go ahead, Lamont.
That's a good way to go. But is it too much to ask if the other stations in the net, you know, in the network have an ability to do the total recorded, to just to do it, to put it there. I mean, it will facilitate things for Brian and Mark and the staff here. I mean, if they can't do it, of course we'll take what they can get us. But if they can do it, and it, you said it's so inexpensive, it just would facilitate everything. So that's another handling if something necessary later down the line. That's, I mean, is it would it be inappropriate or too much to ask that if they can do it, to put it at the total recorded program?
No, I don't think it's too much. I know KPFK does have it, but they only set it for a 90-day time period, and then they erase over it just because they don't have it in their budget to buy external hard drives each and every year, so they just reuse the same one and erase over theirs every 90 days. Other stations,
well, they might have it with
it.
They might have it with a different kind of program too. It's only a 90-day run. Maybe right. For them, you might want to just say quarterly, every 3 months, and that's what you have before you erase it off.
Yeah, they. We are using the compressed format of MP3 at 128. Uh-huh. They record at a WAV file, which takes up way more space. So, for example, on a 500 gig drive, they can only get 90 days, and then they just re-record over it instead of saving it. When we fill up a drive, we install a new one, and the drives are very inexpensive right now. Order software.
Well, I understand what you're saying on this end, but if the other station can only do 3 months, could we ask? I mean, there'd be the lone exception unless something else occurs. Where every 3 months before they erase and use it over, send that to the station here? I mean, to the archives here in Los Angeles?
Well, we don't know what the other stations are doing. I know what KPFK is doing. And so what we're presenting to the task force is to present a motion that would require the stations or suggest to the stations that they begin, if they're not doing it, to do it. And if they are doing it, to send us their backlog of years of recordings so that we can assess them into the archives.
Adriana.
Okay, I got you.
Go ahead, okay. Adriana.
I think that what Chas would mention will solve a lot of problems. If we in the motion, instead of at the end of the year, we mention at the end of the quarter,